This is the Breaker.News podcast for August 12th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature. With 9 weeks to go until the Vancouver Civic election, there is now an eighth contestant for the mayoralty. Fred Harding, a former senior officer with the West Vancouver Police Department, is running with Vancouver First. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone or something who deserved it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps and her removal of the John A. McDonald statue from Victoria City Hall a calculated political move just over 2 months before the election? It certainly diverted attention from more important things like homelessness in the capital city. Canada's first Prime Minister was a Scottish-born lawyer who once represented Victoria in Parliament. McDonald devised the federal system of Indian residential schools that lasted until the 1990s. Children were taken away from their families to live at church-run schools, where many were victims of abuse. Helps announced that the 1982 erected statue would be removed, and that has ignited a debate north of the border, similar to one that raged in the United States. In a 60 Minutes report on the removal of Confederate statues in the U.S., historian Julian Hayter said that there is a better way called recontextualization. Rather than take away statues, Hayter suggested that signs or markers be added with information to help people see old monuments in a new light. The McDonald statue will be put into storage until a plan is hatched, whenever that might be. However, it would be easier for Helps to add a plaque that would explain McDonald's role in ruining the lives of many Aboriginals to balance his importance and his achievements as a nation builder. But Helps is running for re-election, and politicians love to play politics when they should instead be governing. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Channel News Asia reports yacht in 1MDB scandal returned to Malaysia. Indonesia has returned to Malaysia a luxury yacht linked to the multi-billion dollar 1MDB financial scandal, Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad said August 6th, in a move seen as bolstering a corruption probe involving ex-leader Najib Razak. The Cayman Islands registered Equanimity, believed to be worth about $250 million and belonged to a fugitive Malaysian financier with links to Najib, was seized in February off the Indonesian tourist island of Bali. Indonesian authorities detained the superyacht following a request by the U.S. Department of Justice, which is investigating alleged massive misappropriation involving the 1MDB state fund. In the Los Angeles Times, Laura Newberry reports, fed-up locals are setting electric scooters on fire and burying them at sea. They've been crammed into toilets, tossed off balconies, and set on fire. They've even been adorned with dangling bags of dog droppings. As cities like Santa Monica and Beverly Hills struggle to control a rapid proliferation of electric, pay-per-minute scooters, some residents are taking matters into their own hands and waging a guerrilla war against the devices. These vandals are destroying or desecrating the vehicles in disturbingly imaginative ways and celebrating their illegal deeds on social media, in full view of authorities and the public. The vandalism echoes a rash of pellet gun attacks on so-called Google buses in the Bay Area and appears to be motivated in part by resentment over the increasing presence of tech corporations along the Southern California coast, what is now dubbed Silicon Beach. And in the South China Morning Post, Wendy Lee reports, Japanese porn star Sora Ayo wears Young Pioneer's red scarf at charity event, sparking anger in China. A love potion company in China has apologized for letting Japanese former porn star Sora Ayo don the red scarf, a symbol of the Communist Party's young pioneers, at a charity event, according to media reports. Shanghai-based firm Baijin Tang issued a statement through its Weibo account on August 6th, apologizing for the improper use of the red scarf and damage to Chinese people's feelings. The video, filmed early last week, shows Sora wearing the red scarf at an event to raise money for poor students in Dehong in Yunnan province, Beijing Youth Daily reported. In 2016, human rights activists criticized Liberal MP Joe Pescasolito and Vision Vancouver City Councillor Kerry Jiang for both wearing the same red scarves at a Chinese flag-raising ceremony outside Vancouver City Hall. That's Around the Rim for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Jeff Manning reports, class action lawsuit on Nike, where women are devalued and demeaned. Four women are suing Nike, claiming their former employer has for years perpetuated a culture of unequal compensation and sexual harassment. The class action lawsuit filed August 9th in the U.S. District Court in Portland is among the first to hit the Washington County company since a wave of complaints about pay disparities and bullying managers became public earlier this year. In response, the company parted ways with at least 11 executives in March and April, though it never publicly disclosed why or accused them of anything. The plaintiffs accused Nike of violating the Federal Equal Pay Act, the Oregon Equal Pay Act, and the Oregon Equality Act. They don't ask for specific monetary damages. Rather, they seek a court order requiring Nike to pay its employees fairly without regard to gender. The company has publicly acknowledged it has a gender and racial equity problem, which could complicate its defense efforts. In the Seattle PI, Daniel DeMay reports, Pearl Jam puts spotlight on Seattle homelessness with historic home shows. For the first time in 5 years, Pearl Jam played their Seattle hometown and made it count. They raised more than $11 million from the home shows at Safeco Field to do their part to battle homelessness in Seattle. More than 12,000 people around King County live on the streets or in shelters. Vedder shared that when the band had an office in Pioneer Square, he used to go over to a certain sandwich shop for lunch regularly. At the sandwich shop, a man also named Eddie got the same sandwiches as Vedder. The man wasn't just a local, he was homeless, often wearing a tarp and telling Vedder that he was a Vietnam veteran and, at times, sharing details about the horrors he had seen. When the band went on tour in Europe, Vedder returned and couldn't find Eddie. He soon found out that Eddie was still around, living under the Alaskan Way Viaduct, but after yet another tour, Vedder returned to find that Eddie was dead. He had written a song about Eddie, though, before he died, a song called Even Flow that Eddie never got to hear. Freezin', rest his head on a pillow made of concrete. And the Breaker.News reported, if Lisa Helps doesn't want Sir John A., then Doug Ford does. Ontario Premier Doug Ford, whose Progressive Conservative government offered to pay for the statue of the Father of Confederation to be shipped to Ontario, where Canada's first Prime Minister, a Conservative to boot, was the Member of Parliament for Kingston. Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps is running for re-election on October 20th, and she announced August 8th that the 1982 erected statue of the former Victoria MP would be removed, in sympathy with local First Nations because of McDonald's role in setting up Indian residential schools. City Council rubber-stamped the removal. But a letter to Helps from Ontario Government House Leader Todd Smith said, Sir John A. Macdonald built and shaped this country and province. He connected the West to the East under one flag and one name. Helps wants to hide the statue for an unspecified amount of time until a new location with a new context is found. Helps is promoting her re-election campaign by using her City Hall email account, and she opened a Twitter account this month. In March, more than 1,500 people were counted as homeless or living in inadequate housing in Victoria. A third of them are Indigenous, despite Aboriginals being less than 5% of the population. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. With 9 weeks to go until Vancouver's civic election, there are now 8 candidates for mayor. The latest who is hoping to succeed Vision Vancouver's Gregor Robertson is Fred Harding. Vancouver resident Fred Harding is the former face and voice of the West Vancouver Police Department. He is throwing his hat in the ring for the Vancouver First Party. The 13-year veteran of London's Metropolitan Police retired from the West Vancouver force last year after an 18-year career on the North Shore. He is now a consultant in Canada, South Korea, and China, and has a famous wife, Chinese singer and model Zhang Mi. I spoke with Fred Harding about why he wants to become mayor of Vancouver.
A lot of things I had to contemplate. First of all, was I the right person for it? Was this something that I could actually do? Could I make promises and deliver on those promises? Well, after a lot of conversation with the people who wanted me to run, a lot of conversation with my wife, we decided there is so much that we can do for the city of Vancouver. We love Vancouver. This is the place that I chose to live. And we know that there are so many problems that we can help to fix. So my why covers everything from my work on the downtown east side, my work with First Nations, obviously law and order, the issues that people are facing, those who are struggling, those who are not struggling, is my why is we can do so much to make this the greatest city on earth. And I don't say that without with hyperbole. We can do so much for the city.
If you become mayor of Vancouver and Vancouver First becomes the majority party on city council, what would you do to turn Vancouver around and make it the city that should be?
Well, there's so much to do. It's hard to know where to start. I mean, come October 21st, I will have to know exactly where to start. But we're going to look at affordability. We need to look at housing. And I think giving people the confidence that they can actually get by in this town, give people the confidence that there will be a plan in place to make housing affordable. There will be a plan in place to work on the affordability of the city. And there will be a plan in place to work on the transportation and transit in the city. I think that will be a great place to start in giving people the confidence or to have confidence in Vancouver once again.
If you were mayor today, what would you do immediately to solve those problems, solve the affordability problem, and keep those people from moving out of Vancouver because they can't afford it anymore? What would you do now if you were in power today?
Oh my goodness. Well, now if I was mayor today, I think I would start on taxes and transportation. First of all, I want people to, here's one thing which is really important to me. People are upset with how crowded and congested our roads are. That's one thing that's driving people crazy. I'm meeting a lot of people and they're all telling me that they are so sick of the traffic, the congestion, and this is another reason why people want to go out, as well as obviously the high cost of living. So let me start there. We want to see free transport on public transit for people who are 18 and under. There's the All Aboard campaign, and we strongly support that. And I think that will get thousands of cars off the road if people 18 and under can travel for free. Now, I also hear, you know, the complaint about this is that this can cost $35 million a year. That's a paltry sum when you look at that cost being shared across the municipalities. So I think free transport for 18 and under is definitely one of the places where we want to start. And we want to really work on the tax regime in the city. So people are paying way, way, way too much in taxes. The taxes on the homes is unacceptable. We have to work to get those taxes down. There's no reason that they need to be so high. We know that over the last 10 years, the tax base or the tax collection has tripled. They're getting 3 times in revenue from taxpayers as they were 10 years ago. It's out of sync. It's out of balance with what people can pay and what people are prepared to pay. We have to really work on that as a party.
And of course, your background in police would make it natural for law and order to be part of your platform. It doesn't seem to have been a priority of Vision Vancouver since they came to power in 2008.
No, it wasn't a priority of theirs. And one of the things that I want to see how many police officers are back on the street. I believe the numbers are 1,500. I remember when I was first came to Vancouver, I was really interested to see that the amount of security companies going back into the days of the Yellow Pages, the amount of security companies, there was dozens, dozens, dozens of pages in the of security companies. That was because we don't have a lot of enough police. I want to see how what Adam Palmer's looking at for the police department. The one thing we believe though is that the rule of law must be respected, and that's not just because I'm a cop. It's just because we need some order, and that's really important for us. But I want to look at the numbers of police officers. I want to look at where we can make improvements in policing. But one place where we believe we can is by helping the police make improvements in their recruitment process.
Issues on a provincial scale. This does involve Vancouver to a great extent, but provincial scale of money laundering, casinos. We've got ongoing conflicts in gangs extending out to the Fraser Valley. We've got the situation with the opioid crisis, with people dying of overdoses in epidemic numbers. A lot there, and a lot of it ties into Vancouver. It's a major port city. It's a major city that is a crossroads, according to police intelligence, a crossroads for transnational crime.
Well, if you're asking what we're going to do about that, this is another area. So my experience in this was that I touched on a lot of stuff on gangs. I dealt with a lot of that information, and we're going back, from over the years. We need to make sure that the police have got the resources that they need. They must have the resources that they need. One of the things that was always difficult was when they needed to do a particularly big job, they were scratching around for funds constantly. We need to make sure that that money is available. People have got no idea of when you've got an issue with a gang that's in town, or it's either a new gang that's come from another province, and they set up shop in Vancouver. The amount of intelligence work that needs to be done. Now, intelligence is expensive, and chief constables are struggling to find is can they justify the spending? And they're always talking about justifying the spending, and we're looking at public safety. The public really don't have an idea of how much hand-wringing, how much anxiety goes into trying for chief constables to find the money to pay to keep them safe. As the mayor, I want to make sure, not that the floodgates are open, there's got to be accountability, right? We all understand that. But I want to make sure that chief constables are not wringing their hands and having to rob Peter to pay Paul. We need to make sure, as a town, that our priorities on crime are really prioritized, and that the public is kept safe. I just want to give you one quick example. And people get broken into, and police officers are constantly telling them to go to the downtown east side to find their property. It's incredible for me to drive down on East Hastings Street and see this, like a market of crime that's out there, and it goes on uninterrupted, with people being sent there to go and recover their property. I will ensure that that crime market ends on October 21st. That's done. It's finished. You can't have your house broken into and be directed onto the downtown east side to go and get your belongings back, or whether it's your tools, your jewelry, or your vacuum cleaner, whatever it may be, or your heirlooms. That market must end. That is crime that's rife in the open air. No other city, I think, on earth will tolerate that kind of criminality.
What do voters need to know about Fred Harding now?
Oh, look, Fred Harding's a completely rounded individual. So it's not just about policing. I don't come at this as a retired police officer now trying to find my niche. What I bring to the table is that I have a lot of experience in business. I have experience in business in Asia, and I have obviously experience in policing. But Mike, the policing, and this is you'll hear if you're there on Sunday, where a lot of my passion comes from is. My policing, although it was in West Van, was not about just dealing with the rich, the wealthy. I dealt with a lot of people who've never heard the words "and the award goes to" or "and in first place." I dealt with the people on the downtown east side, and of course I was exposed very, very much to the Missing Women's Task Force and the issues around the murdered and missing women as well. Fred Harding is an individual who's been basically shaped out of looking at the adversity of others, out of looking at how people are treated in this province, how people have been taxed in this province, how people have been marginalized. There's so much. And of course, I've also had my exposure to business where I've seen the success of business. So when I come to Vancouver, I want people to know that they'll have a mayor who's going to be looking after everybody's interests, not just the wealthy, not just the ones that can that have already found success, but those who are struggling in Vancouver.
That was my interview with Fred Harding, who is the Vancouver First candidate for mayor in the October 20th civic election. Listen to the Breaker.News podcast on the way to the election for interviews with candidates from across the spectrum. Those were some sounds of summer from the 42nd annual Powell Street Japanese Festival in Vancouver's downtown East Side. That was the jazz stylings of the Kaya Kurtz Quartet, recorded live August 5th. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanamo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the City of North Vancouver for finally taking action to shut down Emily Yu's illegal Oasis Hostel. Yu is the owner of a townhouse near North Vancouver City Hall. For years, she has defied her strata council and the Civil Resolution Tribunal by continuing to operate an illegal Airbnb hostel with up to 14 beds for rent. City Hall has asked a judge to authorize the shutdown of the Oasis Hotel. It is about time that City Hall enforced the law against Yu, who is also a policy chair with the North Vancouver Liberal Riding Association, and she is also facing discipline from the Mutual Fund Dealers Association of Canada for misconduct. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That was the Kaya Kurtz Quartet, recorded live at the 42nd annual Powell Street Japanese Festival on BC Day weekend in Vancouver. Do you have an event that The Breaker should know about? Email bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for August 12th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 12th in 1983, almost 42,000 people were on hand for the AAA Pacific Coast League record crowd at BC Place Stadium in Vancouver? Tony Oliva's home run off Juan Marichal was the first dinger hit under a dome in Canada during an old-timers game. Baseball Hall of Famers were the warm-up act for the Phoenix Giants' 10-9 win over the Vancouver Canadiens. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.